Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. I did a video recently on the worst Supreme Court decision ever, which I said was Kelo. And I had a lot of people respond to that and point out some of their votes for what they would consider to be the worst Supreme Court decision ever, including many people who obviously mentioned Dred Scott. And the problem with the Dred Scott case is it's not considered good law anymore. There were some constitutional amendments that came out after that that pretty much corrected the problem of the Dred Scott opinion. But, and I have to tell you, obviously if I say, hey, this is the worst or this is the best or anything like that, it's a subjective thing. And the reason that I went with Kelo when I was talking about, you know, the worst Supreme Court opinion ever in my mind was that I think Kelo is something that could affect everyone. It could affect everyone on one level or another. If you're ever going to be a homeowner, in theory, your home could be taken from you under Kelo. But I had quite a few people, and I was impressed. You people are impressing me. I was impressed at how many people mentioned Wickard versus Filburn. Wickard versus Filburn. And what's funny is, I'll admit, the first person who mentioned it caused me to do one of those. Because I'm like, the name rings a bell, but I had to look it up to double check. And sure enough, it was a case I remember vividly pissing me off in law school. So I took a class in law school, as most attorneys do, called con law, constitutional law. And in fact, I suspect it's one of the prerequisites in every law school across the nation. And you understand that you study not just the Constitution itself, but the legal aspects of the Constitution. And you spend a lot of time reading cases that have interpreted different sections, different amendments, portions of the Constitution. And Wickard versus Filburn is a shocking case. And here's the thing. It actually has affected many, many, many people. Through what it allowed the courts to do and the government to do in its wake. So I agree with you when you tell me that your vote would have been for Wickard versus Filburn, because I you know, I'll admit, up at the very rarefied air of the worst decisions ever, there's, you know, possibly three or four we could argue about, and I think I'm gonna admit that Wickard versus Filburn, it might not displace Kelo, but it's certainly right up there in the pantheon of bad Supreme Court decisions. So I'm now going to explain to you what happened in Wickard versus Filburn. A farmer in Ohio named Roscoe Filburn. And by the way, that's a name you don't hear anymore. You don't hear enough parents naming their children Roscoe. But Roscoe Filburn had a wheat farm, and he also had animals on his farm. And this is in the 1930s, 1940s, okay? And the U.S. government tried a whole bunch of things to try to get us out of the depression that was, you know, preceding World War II. And one of the things that they had done was they had established limits on farm production. And based on how many acres you had and what it was that you grew, the government would tell you, here's what you can grow on your farm this year. And Filburn admittedly grew more wheat than the government said he was permitted to grow. And so they said, okay, in exchange for that, we're going to penalize you. You're not going to be penalized for growing too much wheat. And Filburn's argument was, this is not the business of the federal government. I am a farmer in Ohio. I grow wheat, and I should be allowed to grow as much wheat as I want. And if I grow a lot of wheat and I'm efficient at it, in fact, that should be rewarded, if nothing else. And I'm going to get punished for growing wheat? And so here's the big question. Does the federal government have the right, and this is a narrow question first, does the federal government have the right to actually tell individual farmers, here's what you can grow, here's what you can grow, here's what you can grow, here's what you can grow. And if you don't follow the federal government's guidelines, can they penalize you? Is that constitutional? And the federal government said, yes, it's something we can do because we're allowed to regulate interstate commerce. And in the Constitution is a clause referred to as the Commerce Clause. And it says specifically that the federal government can regulate interstate commerce. Now, most people, when they read the Constitution in a plain language, just logical reading, and they see the federal government is allowed to regulate interstate commerce, most people think that means something to the effect of, okay, you got a bunch of states, okay? And one state says, you know something, we're going to put a tariff on all the stuff that passes through our state. And the next state goes, oh, so we're going to do that too, put up tariffs. Next thing you know, all the states have got tariffs. And the feds could step in and go, guys, you can't do that, okay? We want to encourage interstate commerce. You can't do this. We're not allowing you to do that. That seems to make sense that you do that. But the idea that you're going to go in and pick one particular business, i.e. farmers, and say, we're going to micromanage how you run your farm and, you know, tell you how much you can grow of something. People go, where does that come from with respect to being able to regulate interstate commerce? So the Supreme Court, in the case of Wickard versus Filburn, said whether the subject of the regulation in question was production, consumption, or marketing is therefore not material for purposes of deciding the question of federal power before us. And here's the thing. Filburn actually said that the extra wheat he was going to grow, he wasn't going to sell. It was never going to enter commerce. He was going to feed it to his animals. Okay? And somebody on the other side said, oh, that means you won't have to buy the wheat from somebody else. Therefore, you're hurting somebody else by not buying their wheat. So, Supreme Court speaking again, even if appellee's activity be local, and though it may not be regarded as commerce, it may still, whatever its nature, be reached by Congress if it exerts a substantial economic effect on interstate commerce. And this, irrespective of whether such effect is what might at some earlier time have been defined as direct or indirect. So the Supreme Court in Wickard versus Filburn interpreted the Constitution's Commerce Clause, which is Article 1, Section 8, which permits the U.S. Congress to regulate commerce among the several states. The court decided that Filburn's wheat-growing activities reduced the amount of wheat he would buy for animal feed on the open market, which is traded nationally and thus is interstate, and said that's within the, you know, the purview of the Commerce Clause. And now Filburn says, look, my farm is so small that my not buying wheat on the open market is not going to affect anybody. And they said, well, the cumulative action of thousands of other farmers, if they behaved like Filburn, would certainly become substantial. Therefore, the court decided that Filburn's production could be regulated by the federal government. And this is one of those things that is so strange to think about. But we've all heard the joke that if you have a farm, the best thing you can do is get the government to pay you not to farm. Because you don't do any work, you get some money. These kinds of price controls have almost never worked. And I'm not going to get into a debate here on economics. But I'm going to get into a debate here on what most Americans think they've got the right to do. And that is they've got the right to be let alone. They've got the right to run a business as they see fit. There is nothing more American than an American farmer who's raising stuff he can feed his family with and help feed the rest of the country with. I mean, that's seriously, you know, I understand that when we founded our country, we had lawyers, we had doctors, we had blacksmiths, we had, you know, all these different tradespeople, okay? But we had farmers. And if we didn't have farmers, we would have starved to death, okay? I'm somebody ought to be playing patriotic music right now for me to underscore how important I think farmers are to this country and how important they've always been. And so the idea that the federal government would step in and try to regulate the farmers like this, to me, is idiotic. It's the same opinion I had back when I was in law school, and after 27 years of practicing law, I still think it's idiotic. So here's what happened. In July of 1940, the Agricultural Adjustment Act of 1938 had been passed, and it said that Roscoe Filburn could farm his 11-acre farm and a normal yield of 20 bushels of wheat per acre. And so he was given a notice of, they said, here's your allotment. Here's what you can grow this year. And so despite the notices, Filburn planted 23 acres. So he planted too many acres. And he harvested 239 more bushels than was allowed from his excess area. Now, when the feds stepped in and tried to fine him on this, he fought it in court. And the federal district court ruled in favor of him. And the interesting thing is that the government then appealed that, and it wound up in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, which called the district court's holding a manifest error, then went on to uphold the act and also the Interstate Commerce Clause, which they said they were doing this under. It's interesting to note, and there's been a lot written on this case, but if you look at it historically, you discover that one of the things that's most telling is that when the case appeared before the Supreme Court, 9 justices, 8 of them had been appointed by Franklin Roosevelt. And Franklin Roosevelt, of course, was in office longer than any other U.S. president before or after. And while there, he got to appoint a whole bunch of Supreme Court justices. And Roosevelt, of course, had spent a lot of his time on the New Deal trying to remake America, especially after the Depression and so on. So the rationale of the Agricultural Adjustment Act was an attempt to stabilize the price of wheat on the national market. And the federal government has the power to regulate interstate commerce, okay? And so in this decision, the court unanimously reasoned that the power to regulate the price at which commerce occurs was inherent in the power to regulate commerce. So it's a strange idea. So there were a whole bunch of different arguments raised about this, and you can shout and scream about it all you want, but the case came down, and that's the case. And so Wickard versus Filburn became the case that the feds would point to any time they felt like doing something about somebody conducting business somewhere. And they would argue and say, well, it's interstate commerce. And once in a while, they would do something where you look at it and go, that result makes sense to me. There's the famous case about the hotel down south that wouldn't allow minorities to check in. And they just said, that's our policy. You can't do that. And the Fed stepped in and said, under the Commerce Clause, we can regulate that and force you to open up your doors to everybody. That one to me makes sense. Now, if you follow this all the way through to its logical conclusion, you'd know that in 1995, the United States versus Lopez, they say, is the first decision in 60 years to invalidate a federal statute on the grounds that it exceeded the power of the Congress under the Commerce Clause. And the opinion actually mentioned Wickard and said perhaps it was the most far-reaching example of Commerce Clause authority over interstate commerce, and judged that it greatly expanded the authority of Congress beyond what was defined in the Constitution under that clause. Trying to see here. In Lopez, the court held that while Congress had broad lawmaking authority under the Commerce Clause, the power was limited and did not extend so far from commerce as to authorize the regulation of the carrying of handguns, especially when there was no evidence that carrying them affected the economy on a massive scale. So in a later case, U.S. versus Morrison, the court ruled that Congress could not make such laws even when there was evidence of an aggregate effect on interstate commerce. Now, here's the thing. The Supreme Court has since relied heavily on Wickard in upholding the power of the federal government to prosecute individuals who grow their own medical marijuana. The Supreme Court also held in Gonzalez versus Reich that, like with the homegrown wheat at issue in Wickard, homegrown marijuana is a legitimate subject of federal regulation because it competes with marijuana that moves in interstate commerce. That's a paragraph that I never thought I'd be reading out loud. In case you're curious, it was this argument that came up in National Federation of Independent Businesses versus Sebelius and Florida versus the United States Department of Health and Human Services on the constitutionality of the individual mandate of the Affordable Care Act. Interestingly, in the Obamacare cases, both sides pointed to Wickard versus Filburn and said, hey, that supports us. And as I'm sure you recall, Justice Roberts wrote the opinion that said Commerce Clause allows Obamacare to be legal, and it's actually an issue of taxing versus taking, and therefore it's good law. I had several people who suggested that those cases should be at the top of the pyramid of the worst Supreme Court cases of all time. I hear you. I feel your pain. But I'm not sure if that's particularly the best argument out there. We're all entitled to our own opinions. But I personally see the argument here about Wickard versus Filburn because it's very hard to imagine that the drafters of the Constitution, when they're finished with their masterpiece and they're all sitting down and getting ready to argue it and get it passed through all the various states and so on, that any of them thought, by the way, this document here will empower the federal government to stick its finger in some guy's business over in another state and say, you're a farmer, we can tell you what to grow, how much to grow, and if you deviate from what we tell you to grow, we can fine you. I don't think anybody would have foreseen that. So Wickard versus Filburn, one of the worst cases of all time from the U.S. Supreme Court. And keep suggesting them. I've got a couple others lined up, but I will talk about more bad cases from the U.S. Supreme Court. So stay tuned. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.